Drive with Julian Clover.
Getting you home.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Now, take a listen to this.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News. It is reported that at 8:50 p.m., a huge flaming object, believed to be a meteorite, fell on a farm in the neighborhood of Grover's Mill, New Jersey, 22 miles from Trenton. We now return you to the music of Ramon Rockello, playing for you in the Meridian Room of the Park Plaza Hotel, situated in downtown New York.
An alien invasion throws humanity into chaos in the classic sci-fi novel The War of the Worlds, but all it took to cause real-life panic in the streets, apparently, was Orson Welles' 1938 radio adaptation, which listeners took for news. It couldn't happen today, could it? Well, we had the Mill Road sinkhole, I suppose. Drama Group Boards is staging a new production of War of the Worlds, The Panic broadcast, that is based on that CBS transmission. Colin Lawrence is here from Boards. Couldn't happen, could it, Colin?
Well, who knows, Julian? I mean, in this day and age, there's instant coverage on social media. Somebody puts a message out there, everyone believes it.
Because we did have, and I'm trying to remember who it was now, I have a feeling it might have been Ollie Mears. If it wasn't Ollie Mears, it would have been somebody like him, who heard a bang whilst he was shopping on Oxford Street in the weeks before Christmas. He tweeted it, and goodness me, I had a news story here and everything, and police couldn't find a thing. So I guess it could happen in a way.
Yes, well, I suppose it could really, yes.
To me, though, that little clip we heard there, along with the Hindenburg disaster, I don't know if you've ever heard the radio commentary of that one.
Yes, it's Morrison, it's one of those
classic radio moments. So I'm interested into how you can take War of the Worlds, the radio broadcast, and then put it on the stage.
Well, this adaptation is by a writer called Joe Landry, he's an American, and he got the idea to actually do a play within a play. So the play is actually set in 1948, 10 years after the Orson Welles broadcast, and it's a fictitious radio company, a drama company, who are going to recreate the infamous 1938 broadcast. But what you actually get in the play is, before you get the broadcast, which is actually reenacted as part of the play, that's the jam in the sandwich. What you've got either side of that is what actually happened before the broadcast. For example, there's an interview with Howard Koch, who wrote the script for it. He explains why he wrote it and how he wrote it and how the Mercury Theatre worked. Once the broadcast has taken place, there is a break partway through when a lot of phone calls are being made at the studio, and one of the producers, John Houseman, rushes in and says, people are ringing up, they think it's real, Orson Welles can't believe it, everybody has a good laugh. They go on and complete the broadcast. After that, the studio fills up with reporters and all sorts of people trying to find out what's actually been going on. So Orson Welles then has to explain what they were doing.
So in a way, it's kind of drama documentary in a roundabout way, isn't it? Because you're getting a dramatised version of something, well, in part, the jam and the sandwich, as you describe it, of what happened, and around it, a recreation which is presumably based on facts of sort, or elements of fact, will be there.
Yes, it's based on, obviously, a lot of reports that were made after the event. The play is set in a radio studio, and so the actors are actually purporting to be actors with scripts in their hands and so on and so forth. But
is that a good way to hide lines if somebody's having a bit of trouble?
Yes, but as a director, I make it very clear the actor's got to know the lines anyway. So the script becomes a prop, effectively, but only during sort of the broadcast and also the fictitious station when some of their announcers are making comments. But what you also get, and this is really what I've tried to do for the benefit of the audience, because if you just had a bunch of people standing in front of microphones, it wouldn't be very interesting. So a lot of the things like where the reporters rush in and there's Orson Welles is trying to explain, we're trying to sort of recreate those in a dramatic fashion. So the audience have got something to visualise and actually see.
Now, this is taking place at the Corpus Playroom, which has this rather nice sort of, It's sort of L-shaped. Maybe it's backwards L-shaped if I think about it properly. But the audience is sitting on either side almost of the stage. Does that
yes.
Does that help in this instance? Because I'm wondering, sometimes I've seen a production there and I'm thinking to myself, oh, I bet they wished there were just an audience sat in front of them for this one.
Well, I think it depends what sort of play you're doing. I think this type of play sits pretty well. I mean, obviously I'm here to talk about this, but many years ago I did a production in the playroom of Dick Barton, which was like a BBC.
That's another radio show, isn't it?
But that was done in a completely different way. Mm. So the corpus seats about 80 people. It's very sort of intimate. But it's an ideal venue for something like this because the actors are very close to the audience. And obviously what we're trying to do is recreate that period. And also, because Orson Welles, a lot of people forget this, Orson Welles was 23 when this happened.
It's very old. When did the Third Man? Third Man was late 50s, would it have been?
Well,
I'm trying to think now.
He went to Hollywood after this and did The Magnificent Ambersons and Citizen Kane and so on. But it's interesting that he was known as the Boy Wonder, and the Mercury Theatre was his baby. The big thing about it was it didn't have a sponsor. And so most radio programmes had commercials. The fictitious station that we're doing, that we're actually recreating, does have a sponsor. And so we do have some quite entertaining commercials that come in. They're done live with people singing bits and pieces. So it's an overall experience. But in the middle, you have got the actual broadcast.
How easy is it to find the props for things like this? Or does it matter insofar as, I guess, some of my techie colleagues here might look and say, yeah, but that's not the particular microphone. I mean, it kind of doesn't matter, really, does it?
It's very interesting you should raise that point because the designer of the show is Barry Brown. He's also in it. But also our master carpenter is a fellow called Peter Crofts, and he's a very, very clever man. He's actually built us. We need dummy microphones, obviously. And we've looked at photographs of the CBS microphones at the time, and he's actually made some replicas, and they do look pretty good.
Oh, really? I'm trying to think what they would have been. There, some it depends. I think of they'd be quite large. We have these sort of on green little mufflers on with our logo, but these were quite often exposed, weren't they? With sort of wires going here and there.
Well, yes, they do.
And obviously the logo of the station on there as well.
Well, we've got the logos on what is effectively the set, which is the bit behind where there's a podium where Orson Welles is throughout the broadcast. And then he comes down to use other microphones. But obviously they're not real microphones, so it avoids having to have wires everywhere and people tripping over and so on and so forth. So, but the recreation of the period is, as I say, it's sort of 48 back to 38.
And the accents. Now, this is set in the United States, so the actors you have, I guess being Cambridge, actually some of them might be American, but how difficult is it for the English voice to master and stick to an American accent? Because I guess we can all do a few lines in an American accent, but it's then maintaining that for the course of the performance.
Well, if you're doing a play and every character is American, and they're all American, there are about 50 characters, but with a cast of just over a dozen, there's about 14 in the cast. Only one of whom isn't American, that's John Houseman. He was English. I don't know if you know about John Houseman, but he was a very famous sort of producer and also an actor, and very, very RP. But when you've got a lot of actors and they're all doing an American accent, and because the actors could have come from anywhere, as long as it's consistent, then, you know, that's fine.
Mm. We mentioned the Corpus Playroom, where this production is taking place next week, I think. I guess boards go there from time to time, but also at the moment you've got the added complication of ADC, where I know you also perform, being closed for a few running repairs, and decorators are in there. So was this one which was destined initially for Corpus, or were you intending to go do it at ADC if you could have done?
Well, we plan our programmes about a year in advance, and we knew this was coming up, and like a lot of other companies in Cambridge, we were looking for alternative venues. So we decided on this occasion, our July production, which would normally be a main house show at the ADC, that we would do something at the Corpus. And, you know, I put this play forward and it was accepted, and that's what we're going to do. In fact, we're not back at the ADC, the main house, until April next year.
And that is the autumn sometime, I think, isn't it, when it's due to be reopened?
I believe it's about October time.
Yeah, These tend to be a little elastic, I realise, yes. So we'll worry about that, I guess, near the time.
But our next production, which will be just after Christmas, is again at the Corpus.
Mm. So how many do you do during the course of the year?
Well, our programme for next year is 5 productions. There'll be 3 main house productions and there'll be 2 effectively studio productions.
That's quite an effort. I don't know, how do you describe yourselves? You know, do you describe yourselves as an amateur company, as a semi-professional? It's a tricky one, really.
Well, Boards is an amateur production company. It's not like a drama group where you have members. So we have open auditions for all our shows. And people come from far and wide to audition. We have open submissions from directors. And so the company is administered by a committee that's selected sort of annually. And we consider the productions and obviously we produce the show. But we'll have a director who directs it, we'll have a designer, we'll have all the other people that come along to make sure it happens.
No. Well, I hope that this one is happening at the Corpus Playroom between July the 10th and July the 14th, if I've got the dates right.
It's at 7:45 nightly, and you can get the tickets from the ADC Theatre on their website, adtheatre.com, or by telephone on Cambridge 3085.
Oh, that was done, well, it's a typical actor, I suppose, done without, like, Colin, technically the director of this one, done without out notes, which is very, very impressive. I've been here 5 years, I still have to have it written up in front of me as to what our phone number is. Colin Lawrence, thank you very much for coming in to see us. War of the Worlds, the Panic broadcast, as on at the Corpus Playroom, as we heard there, between July the 10th and the 14th. It's 5:15.